Welcome to episode 77 of Practical Defense, Terrorism Survival Tips. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I am your host, Alex Addix. This week, we're going to cover some safety tips if you find yourself in a terrorist attack. Now, a lot of people say to themselves, I'll never be involved in a terrorist attack. I live in XXX, where XXX is some nice place. And you're right. The chances are really slim that you'll be anywhere near a terrorist attack unless you live in or work in a conflict zone. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with being prepared. Education is always beneficial. There's nothing wrong with learning something new, especially when it comes to self-defense. But just as in traditional martial arts, techniques you learn for one attack may be adopted on the fly for another. And the same goes for this type of education. Techniques used for terrorism survival can be applied to school shootings, convenience store or bank robberies, or any other number of hostile situations. So the benefits to this week's topic go beyond just the masked men with automatic rifles and grenades. But before we get too deep into this week's topic, I want to address the new episode numbering. No, you didn't miss a whole bunch of episodes. I reassigned the numbering of the episodes to accurately reflect how many I've actually produced. Now, the numbers got a bit messed up when I started counting the quick tips under a different series and then combined them later. There were 19 quick tips under the first numbering scheme. I should have just adjusted the numbering back then, but I didn't. Ah well, hindsight's 20/20. I'm coming up on two big milestones this year. Episode 88 will mark my second year doing the podcast. My first episode was August 12, 2007. Now, back then, I only posted episodes every other week. I didn't go weekly until March 2008, which is when I introduced the quick tips. Also, this year, I should hit the 100 episode marker. Assuming that things stay on track and I don't skip any shows, it looks like that one will be posted probably November 1st. Do I have anything special planned for the 100th episode? Not yet, but it's still early off for all that stuff. If you have any suggestions or ideas, drop me an email and let me know. Last week's knife survival seminar was a blast. We even had two podcast listeners join us. So I want to give a shout out to Gary and Bob for dropping by, and I hope to see them and more of everyone else in future classes. The next seminar is next month on Saturday, June 20th. The subject will be defensive tactics. We cover some great material such as threat zones, the criminal assault cycle, conflict indicators, and physical defense. I'm already receiving registrations, but there are still plenty of spots open. So just drop me an email and let me know if you want to come by. I posted my seminar schedule for the rest of the year. So for those in the Los Angeles area or those that'll be in the Los Angeles area, I'd love to have you come by and take a class. You can find the schedule on my site at www.alexhaddox.com/class. All the seminars are 2 hours and only cost $40. Alrighty, we'll be right back with some safety tips for surviving a terrorist attack. These days, many things are classified as terrorist attacks. Things we used to classify merely as criminal activity or hate crimes are now called domestic terrorism. Sometimes the name change is justified, and other times it's just a stretch. Nowadays, we have expanded beyond general terrorism to include such terms as domestic terrorism and even eco-terrorism, but that doesn't make them any less real or less deadly. Now, a few weeks ago, I attended a firearms training course. When I'm not practicing or teaching my own material, I'm taking other courses, reading reports, researching trends, and just plain talking to folks. It's how I stay on top of what's going on and pick up new skills. Anyway, so one of the other students mentioned that he was taking this particular personal protection course in firearms because he was going to start carrying a handgun in his synagogue. When we picked up our jaws off the floor and could get some words to form, we asked a ton of questions. What he said was going on was that a contingent of people in synagogues around the country are quietly being asked to get training in handguns and to start carrying firearms to worship services for the overall protection of the membership. They didn't want to make a big deal about it and scare people, but they feel having a small, trained group of members carrying concealed would be best for everyone's protection. And the big question, of course, is carrying concealed legal in a place of worship? Well, in the U.S., it absolutely is. It's private property, and you can carry concealed on private property as long as you have permission of the owner. Now, obviously, in the case of my fellow student, a few of them have express permission at his synagogue. Now, if the place of worship forbids firearms or any type of weapon, then it becomes illegal to have them on the premises, even if you have a state carry conceal permit. When it comes to concealed carry, the state may say you're okay to carry, but the property owner can say, not on my land. You know, all it takes is one sign that says, no firearms on premises, and as a civilian, you can't carry there despite how much paper you have or certifications that you can produce. Thankfully, private property is still private property in the United States. Now, I attended this course in the middle of April, almost a month ago. This week, in mid-May, there was a big story about a foiled terrorist plot to blow up a synagogue in the Bronx, New York. They also planned to shoot down military aircraft with Stinger missiles. Now, one man's a Haitian, and the other three are U.S. citizens. So are the synagogues overreacting? You know, I don't think so. Heck, the synagogues down the street from my house have been shut down several times in the past year because of bomb threats. Now, I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and L.A. is considered the most culturally diverse city in the history of the world. Yes, even more than New York City. Where I live now, I can practically throw a stone in any direction and hit three or four different religious institutions. Now, just within about 6 blocks of my house, I have one Catholic church, one Lutheran church, a Methodist church, two synagogues. And I'm also about 2 miles away from the nearest Hindu temple. When I lived in West Los Angeles, I was 2 blocks from a synagogue and 2 blocks from a Baha'i temple. Now, for those that don't know, Baha'i are a super liberal form of the Muslim faith. In my personal experience, the only religious institutions that I saw that were shut down due to threats were the synagogues. But shooting and blowing up religious institutions isn't restricted to anti-Semitism. I did about 2 minutes of research and discovered that there have been numerous shootings in Christian churches as well for the past couple of years. And some of them have even been stopped by trained, armed members of the church. Now, for example, on December 9, 2007, a gunman opened fire in a Colorado church, killing 2 people and injuring another 4. The gunman was stopped by a trained and armed member of the church, a woman, with her personal handgun. She took down a crazed man armed with a rifle with her handgun, saving countless lives in the packed church. Now, the media portrayed her as a volunteer security, but the truth is that she wasn't. They were even buried the fact that she was a woman. The liberal media really doesn't like guns and does their best to vilify guns and gun owners and downplays the role of firearms in protection while overstating their role in the commission of crime. Now, for example, in March of this year, a man shot and killed his reverend during a church service in Illinois. When his gun jammed, he pulled a knife and tried to continue killing people. He was tackled and subdued by members of the congregation, both of whom were stabbed for their efforts. This guy was going to try to kill people regardless of the weapon used, but what did the media focus on? The gun. So, taking a step back from these stories for a moment, let's see how these incidents were classified. When the crime is committed by a group of extremists against a different religious institution, it's called terrorism. However, when a member of the same religion commits a nearly identical crime against his own institution, the perpetrator is called crazed. I certainly agree with these people who are out of their minds. Killing innocent people in their place of worship? You have to be mental to think that's okay. Okay, so where was I going with this? Okay, right. These types of terrorist-style attacks can happen anywhere and at any time. You know, from a place of worship to a fast food restaurant to your workplace. And again, you know, these are really, really rare, despite how the media portrays them. But when they do happen, it can be anywhere. Now, terrorists use a variety of weapons to instill fear and coerce a response. Now, they can use things like bombs, small arms, and what I mean by small arms is handguns, rifles, or handheld explosives, assassinations, kidnappings, hostage-taking, cyber-terrorism, hijacking, skyjacking, arson, vandalism, and weapons of mass destruction. The list of targets is even longer. It can be anything from infrastructure like power or water facilities to a specific economic sector. Since this is such a broad topic, I'm going to focus on the small arms in this episode with a target of being the general civilian population. So in the scenario I'm talking about here, we're looking at a single person or a group of people that enter a room you're in and they start shooting up the place. So what do you do? The first thing you do is hit the ground. Now you want to get down on the ground as fast as you can. Now in hand-to-hand combat, you want to avoid going to the ground. But in the case of small arms fire or explosives, the ground is your friend. So being on the ground does 2 things. First, it limits your exposure to gunfire. Second, it removes you from the immediate field of vision of the attackers. In the eyes of the terrorist, civilians are fodder. They're less than animals that need to be slaughtered. They only see the responding police and military as the true competition. Everyone else is merely in the way and a waste of time. So what you want to do is you want to get out of their way and avoid appearing threatening, appear non-threatening. They will kill you with the same disdain that you might swat at a fly. You know, that's how they think of civilians. Now, if it's safe to move, you want to seek cover. I went over cover versus concealment in episode 53, so you might want to go back and check out that episode. You want a hardened barrier between you and the guy with a gun. If they toss a grenade in or other type of explosive like a pipe bomb, you want to hit the ground as well. But there's some nuances here to explosive survival. Now, you want to hit the ground. Now, just by being flat on the ground, you're avoiding about 85% of the shrapnel from a grenade or a pipe bomb. These types of devices blow up and out, so very little shrapnel actually travels parallel to the ground. So that's where you want to be, hugging the ground. You want to lie face down. You want to face away from the explosive. Now, what you want to do is you want to have your feet facing the explosion. If there's shrapnel, you want to take it in your legs, not your head or your organs. When you're lying on the ground, you want to keep your legs together. And now again, you want to limit the exposure of your upper body and arteries and your inner thighs, so keep your legs squished together, like standing at attention. You want to cover your head and neck with your hands. You also want to open your mouth. This helps with the pressure equalization when the concussion hits you. The concussion can blow out your eardrums and deafen you, and you want to try and keep your ability to hear if at all possible. So opening your mouth increases the chance of keeping your eardrums. Now, in our full-day course, we run drills to practice diving to the ground in the proper position to minimize damage caused by a grenade attack. We also practice bodyguard techniques to protect others from attack. So, for example, what do you do if you're traveling with your spouse, an aging parent, or a child, or even an infant? How would you grab them and put them to the ground and cover them for optimal protection? You know, we even practice with dolls. We practice pulling infants from strollers and going to cover to protect them from in the event of an attack. And since we're talking about children, let's take a quick look at protecting children during an attack. When something huge strikes like an attack, you need to control your child. You don't want to lose them in the rush and confusion of adults running and screaming in all directions. You want to be able to direct their movements in the appropriate direction, which is the other side of you. So what you want to do is you want to place your body between them and the threat. So the surest way of doing that is to grab the child by the hair. Now, I know it sounds extreme and uncomfortable, but you're in an extreme situation and you don't want to deal with a screaming, squirming child only holding them by the arm or a piece of clothing. If you have the head, the body must follow. And the head doesn't squirm the way an arm might. It's hard to break a good hair grip and it keeps them close to your body, making it hard to get separated. So you grab them by the hair and you pull them to you, and then you move them to the opposite side of the threat. If you're taking fire, meaning someone's shooting at you or going to shoot at you, you need to move. So what you need to do is you need to run in a zigzag pattern for cover. Now, I know a lot of comedians make fun of this because it can look funny, but running in a zigzag pattern works. Now, take it from a hunter. If you run in a straight line away from a shooter, you may as well be standing still. So running in a zigzag pattern forces shooters to constantly acquire you as the target. It makes the shot a lot tougher. Now, if you're going to run, you need to calculate the distance to your next cover. And here, we need to remember the 21 feet or 7 meter rule. Now, we use this for the threat distance for a knife attack, but it also works for crossing space with gunfire. It takes between 1.5 to 2 seconds for the average shooter to acquire a target and pull the trigger. Most people can cross 21 feet or 7 meters in that same amount of time. If it's longer than that, you might not want to risk it. So get closer to your endpoint before exposing yourself. Now, there's a story that Jim Wagner told us during our training. It was a real-life incident when the Chechen rebels took over the theater in Moscow in Russia in 2002. Now, during that incident, a woman almost escaped. She played dead and slowly crawled her way to an open door over the course of about a few hours. When she thought she was close enough, she jumped up and ran for the door. Unfortunately, she was shot and killed in the doorway. She ran 9 meters. If she had just crawled a few more feet, perhaps just one more meter, she might have made it outside. So remember the 21 feet, 7 meter rule. It applies to a whole bunch of things. The last suggestion I have in this is to play dead. We even practiced this in our terrorism survival class. You want to be overlooked by the evil men shooting people. If they think you're dead, the chances are they won't shoot you again. Now, there's no guarantee, but the chances are pretty good. In the Virginia Tech shootings, one student, after being shot, played dead. Now, the shooter shot him 2 more times in the leg, but he continued to play dead and he survived. Now, when it comes to the eyes, open or closed, it doesn't matter. Jim told me that in his experience with deadly incidents, he's seen an equal number of bodies with eyes open or closed. However, unless you are really good at not blinking or looking around, keep your eyes closed. But again, the chances are really slim that you'll be anywhere near a terrorist attack unless you live or work in a conflict zone. However, there is nothing wrong with being prepared. You can never go wrong with education and techniques used for terrorism survival that can be applied to any number of situations, and some of which we can't even predict. So it's better to have the knowledge and not need it than to need the knowledge and not have it. So in summary, we have: use the ground. Love the ground. Become one with the ground. Seek cover. Now review episode 53 on cover versus concealment. To terrorists, civilians are fodder and they will kill you without hesitation. They only see the responding police and military as worthy. In the event of an explosives attack, hit the ground, lie face down, face away from the explosive, keep your legs together, cover your head and neck with your hands, and open your mouth. To control and guide your child, grab him or her by the hair, not the arm or by clothing. When you run, run in a zigzag pattern. Remember the 21 feet, 7 meter rule. It applies to a whole bunch of things. Play dead. This is one of those episodes that's crucial if you ever need it, but I really pray that you don't. As always, don't forget to check out my monthly column on taekwondotimes.com. It's called Raising Awareness. And if you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on the show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddicts.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.